This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This morning on The Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to Dato' Gerard Lim, the Executive Director of Sino-Hoan International Berhad. Now, Dato', welcome back to the show. Before we start, and for I guess for the benefit of minority shareholders of Hoan, can we discuss what happened with the trio of SGX-listed companies, the Asia Suns, Blue Mont and Lion Gold, which you and other Malaysians partly owned, individuals which include former Bursa Chairman Dato' Aslan Hashim, Tun Daim Sun Wiradani, even Dato' Zaid Ibrahim. Those firms all under the spotlight, along with Dato' So Chee Wen, Dato' John So, who at his peak controlled several listed counters, including Autoways, Promet, Kelana Mas, UniPhoenix, and Quantum Flour Mills. Dato' So is obviously in the crosshairs of the lawmakers in Singapore for his involvement in the penny stock fiasco, which afflicted the SGX and which continues to afflict the SGX until today. Your two companies, Asia Suns and Lion Gold, were the subject of several of those counters, a part of that alleged price fixing scam. What happened there?
Hi, good morning. Listen, thanks for bringing this up, which obviously is the elephant in the room. You know, this incident happened some 6 years back. And, you know, I think what media has done is really lump everything together without knowing the details. Look, we were very much involved in building up, at that time, Asia Suns into a fund management company or fund management group. And for us, we're very focused on the business side of things. When things blew up, it was really a function of, you know, a whole bunch of people coming together and there was a lot of trading involved. It's you know, from that time until now, it's been very clear that the facts have shown that we have not been involved in, you know, buying or selling or trading of any stock whatsoever. We were absolutely, you know, we were absolutely just focused on the business side of things. And as a result, you know, it's been shown that we've been exonerated. We've been neither been even been given a phone call to ask for a clarification or a statement. But, you know, unfortunately, we were caught, our company and our businesses were caught up in the crosshairs of what's happened now. So, you know, we've spent the last 5 years streamlining the businesses, trying to separate ourselves from this thing. And I think as far as the business in Singapore is concerned, it's very much now separated out and streamlined out already.
Well, the media tends to connect dots, especially with Malaysian businessmen overseas in Singapore, in the absence of information from the parties involved. In the share price rise, in the stellar share price rise of all those companies, obviously the speculation is that the owners of those companies, including yourselves, profited from it. Was that necessarily the case?
Well, I can state a fact that, you know, as far as our group and our directors and partners were concerned, at that, you know, during that whole period, entire period, we neither bought or sold, and that can be easily checked. And as a result, that's actually why we were completely isolated or separate from all these legal issues.
Well, then here you are now in Hoan International, you're the executive director. And in a way, this is your first public outing since that particular era where you're involved with Asia Suns. Why Hoan? I mean, are you close to the Negeri Sembilan royal family to whom this company is inextricably linked?
Well, it's taken us some time to really clean up and streamline what, you know, what had happened. But all this while, I've been keeping in touch with obviously old friends and old business contacts. Hoan is actually a company that we go a long way back in my investment banking days. And it was actually one of the companies that I was helping to get it listed. You know, it was the first Chinese company to be listed, and I was very much involved in that. So about a year ago, the board and the shareholders looked at the business and said, look, we're obviously in a very cyclical industry, in this heavy industries, and there's no visibility on when, you know, it's the business is inextricably linked to steel. And there's not a lot of visibility where steel is going. As a result, that's going to impact where coke prices are going, which impacts Hua'an's profitability. And we had a discussion and said, look, why don't you come on board and help us look to diversify away from this heavy industry? And that's basically how I got involved.
Well, publicly, you don't seem to have any stock in the business. I understand that you've got your own private entities to look after. Why have you agreed to come on to Hua'an? And basically, what are your motivations for doing so?
Like I mentioned, it's a company that I've always kept in close touch with because of the history. And there was this opportunities for this company to... this company kind of shared the same vision as what I had proposed, to say, look, if we really want to help diversify this company, we need to go into industries that, that hands down are not, you know, in a similar type of cycles, in industries that, you know, we're very sure will be very growth-oriented and have huge future potential, you know, over the next, say, foreseeable 5 or 10 years. And it was something that they very much shared the same vision. And as a result, I agreed to come in to help this company.
So there's two new business directions. One is the digital solutions units, and one is the F&B business unit. It sounds as if you propose these ideas to the company itself. Why are you not aligning your interests with that of Hua'an? Why do you not own any stock in the business? Or do you have options which might materialize in future?
Well, nothing of this has been announced, but the company is always looking to bring in investors or shareholders that align with them. So there's a possibility, but nothing is concrete at the moment.
Okay, that doesn't mean anything. So will there be options emerging for your participation on a material basis in the future? Have those discussions taken place? What kind of stake are we talking about?
Obviously, I can't disclose any numbers, but excuse me. The company and the board are looking to ensure that the people involved in charting the new direction for the diversification part do get, you know, the interests are aligned. So I think eventually down the road there will be talk about options or maybe even taking a direct stake in the company.
Okay, so that's a key pivot in terms of the new business, which is the digital solutions business. Touchpoint Groups in Jeran Mahad was the entity that Hua'an bought for 72 million ringgit in cash. Reportedly, initially rebuffed by the board, and then subsequently agreed to in terms of its purchase. Why the initial reservations about buying this business?
I don't think that's actually accurate. The idea was Hua'an had very much decided on going into the digitalization and tech enabling business, where obviously we see a lot of growth coming from. The initial proposal was to take a 51% stake. And I think there was a lot of discussion around, if we're going to go in and take a 51% stake, you know, why don't we go all in and acquire all of it? You know, so I think that's where I went. That's why it took a bit of time to actually come to the stage of being all in and really fully owning Touchpoint.
I'm talking this morning to Dato' Jared Lim, the executive director of Sino-Hua'an International Berhad. We're going to come back after this, Dato', and we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts of Touchpoint, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, Dato' Jared Lim, the executive director of Sino-Hua'an International Berhad. Now, still on Touchpoint, Dato', you paid 72 million ringgit for the business in cash, and at the time, more than half the market value of Hua'an. First of all, why cash? Why so expensive? And how much earnings-wise does it accrue to the business?
Good morning. Listen, let's talk about why we acquired the business first of all, yeah? It's Touchpoint Group. It's really one of the very, very few companies in Malaysia that has a proven record of being what we call a digital enabler. And it's basically proven to go in and enable traditional businesses or industries. So at the very top, it's one of its main focuses is enabling cities to become a smart city. And in that sense, the best example is it's been in Putrajaya for the last few years to partner with Putrajaya to become a smart city. It's very focused in the agriculture business, whereby it's using the IoT, the Internet of Things, to digitalize agriculture. So it's probably one of the first, if not the only one, to have a proven concept to digitalize large-scale palm oil plantations, and now it's going to durians and mixed farming.
That must mean it's hot stuff. But I mean, you paid 72 million ringgit in cash, and 72 million ringgit in cash is a lot of moolah for a company like Hua An, which is loss-making. Again, I mean, why did you go that route? You're a money guy, Dato. Why didn't you issue stock or take on more debt on the promise of future profits from this new business? Why cash?
Well, the way we've structured it is it's actually structured to be paid over a series of transactions. So that's the first. The second part of it is, well, we all agree that this is a very fast-growing industry and this company is unique in not just Malaysia, but in the region. You know, it has a small... We agreed. I mean, this is a price it took for us to acquire this company that we feel has a lot of potential. At the very base level, which is something that I can talk about in terms of numbers, you know, we have at a very, very minimum a guarantee of about 3 million for its first financial year. But obviously, when we look at this business, we're looking at it at many, many times of that. We've done our diligence. We've brought in professionals to help us put together valuations and reports and stuff. And you know, we have the confidence that over the next couple of years, you know, these numbers will multiply.
Well, talk about the financials, because you say that it's established, especially in Putrajaya, but then you also talk about it being high potential. So it's either established or high potential. And if it's got a profit guarantee of 3 million ringgit in the first year, what's the visibility for year two, year three, year four, and year five? Because on 3 million ringgit, with 72 million ringgit in terms of capital infusion, that's 21 times earnings. And that's a lot in this day and age.
Yes. You know, I think from what you've just mentioned, you can kind of... Look, I'm obviously precluded from talking about actual numbers and forecasting projections because it is a listed company.
Well, why not? But like, because you said, if you're buying something for a multiple which is higher than the industry, then you have to be able to show minorities that you're paying fair price for it,
yes,
which is fair and proper.
Yes. I think, like you said, if you're talking about those kind of multiples, well, first of all, most companies in this space... are trading at these multiples or above. Yeah.
On Nasdaq maybe, but not in Malaysia.
In Malaysia, this is probably the only company that's able to do what it does. So we obviously have done our work and these multiples reflect the high growth rates and the high growth that this company is capable of performing. And again, because I'm limited by talking about numbers, but I can tell you that you know, we have confidence that from his base case of 3 million that has been announced.
Well, I'm struggling to understand the concept, because when companies on Bursa announce acquisitions of companies which are private with companies guarantees and profits, there is disclosure and visibility as to how much they will earn over the course of that period. Why are you precluded from disclosing those profits numbers?
Look, we haven't made any announcements on that. So as far as this talk show is concerned, I can't talk about those numbers. What I can say is this is a very high growth industry and company. And the businesses that's involved in already, I'm not saying it's an established business, but it's proven that its product, which is very much a technology product company, it's proven that its product is able to transform or digitalize business or companies or cities. And the monetization is really just beginning, you know. So the growth that we expect is we obviously have very high expectations for this.
I'm talking this morning to Dato' Gerard Lim, the executive director of Sino Hua An International Berhad. Okay, so let's get into the business model of Touchpoint. Why is it so lucrative in the future?
You know, I mentioned briefly about how it is a digital enabler, but just talking about one, it basically has chosen a focus to enable a few main industries or silos. So we spoke about how cities are a business that is really got into, and it's the only one that already has a proven concept in digitalizing a city like Putrajaya, and we're obviously looking at cities all across the region. Agriculture again Touchpoint is one of the very, very first and few that's been able to show a proven concept of digitalizing large scale plantations. In the security part of it, with its AI expertise, it's really going into it in a big way, and retail and industries as well.
So how do you make money?
Well, let's talk about a smart city. So we help to connect the four main stakeholders in a city. The government, connecting it to the residents, so the people who live or work there, connecting it to the merchants or businesses there, and then connecting it to the tourists there. So for example, if you talk about connecting government with the residents, one of the most basic functions is residents are now able, through an app, to be able to give feedback to the council on what's happening in a neighborhood, right? Now, that in itself may not be a transaction, but it basically automatically enables all residents to be linked through this app. As a result of people being linked to an app, we now basically have one part of the supply-demand part of the platform whereby merchants can then come in, and there's about a couple thousand of them to come in and connect and promote their businesses to these merchants. In the case of Putrajaya, it's a very unique situation whereby we've got about 8 million tourists a year. And the plan
Putrajaya has 8 million tourists a year?
It is a number that we never knew.
That seems a bit incongruous, because total number of visitors to Malaysia on a historical basis to Malaysia is 24 million. So the one-third of those people come to Putrajaya?
Yes. And these were official stats given to us by the city itself.
They go there to see?
Oh, I mean, if you have never been to Putrajaya, it's about time you go.
It's architecturally resplendent.
It's architecturally magnificent. There's all sorts of parks and activities. You know, there's over 100-odd events held every year, big and small.
Including hot air balloons.
Hot air balloon, which is happening in the next month or so. The Floria show is a very big show that attracts hundreds of thousands. And almost every month, there's really a couple of major events. And all those events transact through this app. So one of the things you're talking about is how does it get its money? And it's very much transaction-based. So first of all, we've started with events. So all these events can be purchased online or offline through our platform.
Okay, so the future might comprise of the digital solutions, and there's kind of like an argument for that in the future. But you're going from the old world, from that new world, into the old world as well, because the other part of your pivot is also into F&B, right? And then you're buying Bistro Malones, which owns Teh Tarik Place and TGI Fridays. And again, the link with your past with Asia Suns, TGI Fridays via Chaswood Resources was an investee of Asia Suns in those days. Okay, first of all, clarify the link. And secondly, why have you gone from a digital pivot into an F&B analog old world pivot?
Actually, it's because of my previous involvement that I was able to help, structure this deal. And again, you may look at it separately, but what we've been trying to explain is, as we go ahead digitalizing industries, we're digitalizing traditional industries. But at the same time, we're also building a huge ecosystem. And the F&B side of things is a business that we're helping to digitalize and helping to bring into our larger ecosystem. So down the road, look, when we start going from city to city and really linking it all up together, we're also helping to bring in merchants and helping the merchants to digitalize themselves. So owning our own, what you call a traditional type business, it also helped us to leapfrog that initial obstacle, and they will be very much, and they will obviously be the first traditional industry to be brought into our ecosystem.
Okay, so you couldn't share Touchpoint's revenues and profits with us. Can you share Bistro Malone's profits with us in terms of the accretion to the Hua An listed core business?
Again, I'm really limited by what has already been announced. As far as the F&B side is concerned, for this year, they're guaranteeing a minimum profit of about 4.2 million.
Bistro Malone's?
Yes.
Okay,
Bistro Malone's, that's what I can talk about.
So Bistro Malone's offers 4, Touchpoint offers 7, so that's 7, 3, so that offers 7 for the year ahead. I see that Hua An lost 24-odd million, year to date. What does that mean for the company going forward?
The business, the current main business, is still very much in the coke industry, and it's basically in the process of, it's in the business of processing coke and selling it. Having said that, if you look at the history, 2018, the coke business made about 30 million. 2017, it made about 80 million. But then again, before that, it had, you know, massive losses. So it's
230 million down that year in 2016 and 280 million in 2015.
Exactly.
So look, it's a huge gyration.
Undoubtedly, this is a very cyclical industry. And again, I want to go back to the point of it's because of these cycles.
So why don't you get out of that business completely and move into the new digital era, which is obviously where the fruits are?
I can safely say that the board is looking at all options, and we're trying to determine if there's visibility for the coke business down the road in the future, given the light of what's happened. But it's proven to turn around in the past. So it's something that we're really spending a lot of resources looking at. Where is the visibility? When is the next cycle? And is this a business that we feel is confident that it's going to turn around?
So in the interim, you still are Hua An International, a metallurgical coal company, also a digital solutions company, and a restaurant business. Three very different businesses. A, how do you manage it? And B, how does the industry, how does the market value you?
Exactly. In the interim, coke is still very much its core business.
Do you have the expertise to run three very different disparate businesses?
I don't think expertise is an issue. We have acquired the necessary expertise as we've acquired these companies, and we've done enough work with the management to be confident in that. So it really, we look at it as two main splits. One is the old school industrial coke business that we're looking at to see, look, is this a business that, you know, can be the future for this company? The other part of it is we're not waiting for that to happen. We have also started the diversification path into the digital side of it, using Touchpoint as the anchor. And businesses like the F&B will come into our overall ecosystem. It's not going to be managed separately. It's our big part of it is building a product and building a platform and integrating these traditional businesses into it.
Okay, Dato. Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts, and good luck with the new business plan going forward. I was talking to Dato Jared Lim, the executive director of Sino Hua An International Berhad, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.